counting flowers on the wall. That don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. I wait to rival Senator Stutz if he makes it. That'd be great if he had. The business of the legislature is as such today. So we booked today's show, just to give you a little insider information here. We booked today's show. I think some of the lawmakers I had booked assumed that the calendar, the committee schedule, would be the same as it had been in the past. You know, in education policy meets at 9 or whatever, and you know, we always do it that way. It's, you know, but this year they have shuffled some of the schedules, and when I got the commitments for today's show, as it turned out, the committees were meeting at the same time as these interviews were to take place, and unfortunately for the Jeff Poor Show, committee hearings and meetings take precedent over whatever silliness I have for them. So that's what we're running into here. 251-343-0106. I was at the debate last night. It was pretty uneventful until Odell called out Allen for voting for the gas tax as its state representative. Then Allen refused to offer rebuttal and said he will not be responding to Odell's nonsense and that he lost all credibility with his flat earth crap. Then all hell broke loose, complete clown show, if you ask me. And he's, what do we think of Dean Odell? He's just kind of a, he stirs the pot. I've been at events where Dean Odell had been asked to leave. But interesting guy in Alabama politics, and absolutely we'll get him on. It's always I had a good relationship with him, so looking forward to that discussion. Unnamed texter, the Vikings say it's perfect for liberals and Somalians. Rated steel. We should trade Minnesota and Vermont for Alberta. Thanks. Culturally, maybe you're right. In some ways, Minneapolis and St. Paul do feel like Canadian cities. If you ever spent time in any in Canada or up north, now I've not spent much time in Vermont, but they do have those philosophical leanings that would make one think that it's more Canadian than American. But seems to work for those guys. I don't know. Yeah. So 251-343-0106. Another kind of interesting news story here from my 18-19 colleague, Caleb Taylor. Headline, Senate committee passes bill allowing possible special primary elections post SCOTUS redistrict ruling. Well, so the Louisiana case, you've heard a lot about the Louisiana case. And essentially, the federal courts are, they had to create an opportunity district. But now, if you're familiar with the state of Louisiana and its congressional districts, they had to create a congressional map with two minority districts, sort of like what Alabama has. I think they have six districts. You have the one that's kind of most of New Orleans. You have another that's parts of New Orleans into Baton Rouge. You have another that is the most of the coastline. And then you have, you know, four and five, which are just kind of the northern to northwestern and northeastern corners of the state. But then you have the sixth congressional district in Louisiana that incorporates parts of Baton Rouge and it's cut like a sliver up to the middle of the state, and it gets parts of Shreveport. And that's what's being heard. It's a very strange map. If you just Google it, you look at it, and they had to like really lasso in a lot of different communities of Louisiana to create a minority district. That's being heard by the Supreme Court. The idea that you use race to draw congressional districts has always been something that's been rejected by the DOJ and the courts. Now they want to, that's being challenged, and there's a good chance that could get, the way Louisiana has done it, could get struck down by the courts, which would impact Alabama because we have a similar circumstance here with the second congressional district. If that's the case, you've already had your qualifying and your primaries. What do you just have to suck it up in 26 and roll through it? And Senator Gudger spearheaded this, but the bill would, in the event of a Supreme Court decision, allow if the legislature's called back into session to redistrict, and I think that Trump and the National Republicans would lean on Alabama in the event of that. To redraw the districts to something that's more friendly for Republicans, what is the process for the nominees? How will we get them? And you'll have to, the idea here is they have a law now. Elliot was speaking at a committee hearing on this yesterday. It would require the holding of a special primary if a court order is issued, required, or allowed for the changing of a congressional or state legislative district at a point in time too late to be accommodated in a normal primary schedule. It creates an additional window of approximately 100 days and only requires a special primary be held in the affected district, and it requires any special primary to be completed by the 1st of September. The bill will allow more flexibility to adjust or return to the original district's post-ruling from the Supreme Court in the Louisiana case. While we wait on that ruling, if there's any change there, it allows us some flexibility to deal with what the change may be. And it all comes down to the second congressional district and Shamari figures. Right now, we have Hampton Harris, who's qualified for that race on the Republican side. I haven't checked the list in a little while. But, Republicans are kind of turning their nose up at it. They're not interested. You have a ton of candidates running for the first congressional district. We have Jerry Carl, Jimmy Dees, Brent Marquez, Joshua McKee, John Mills, James Richardson, but only one qualified for the second, Hampton Harris. Just looking at this now. Terry LaPointe and Mike is challenging Mike Rogers. We got Adderholt, Tommy Barnes in the fourth. Dale Strong unopposed in the Republican primary to date. Case Dixon challenging Gary Palmer in the sixth. And no one has signed up to run as a Republican in Terry Sewell's district. So there you have it. Jonas, you're better late than never is our good friend. It sounded like you said a little out of breath there, Senator, but State Senator Larry Stutz is here with us. Senator, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you. I apologize for being late. I got engrossed in a discussion in the General Fund Budget Committee and thought I was keeping up with the time and looked down at my watch and realized I had let the time slip away.
It's all fine. We got a little time here. What I wanted to ask you is kind of talk to the audience about this. You ever feel like you need to say "I told you so" on medical marijuana? Here it is, 2026. And that passed in what, 2021? Five years ago.
Just 5 years ago.
And it's been a disaster. And the reason it's a disaster is all these players want to come in, I guess, get in on the business model in the event that we ever do have recreational marijuana for whatever reason, but they want to have their foot in the door, and it's really just really ruined whatever good faith there was, I think, with this whole idea.
Well, I really didn't. I have voted against any bill that had anything to do with that every time it's come up, because I think the potential for corruption, the starting down the path to legalizing recreational marijuana, I mean, if you want to be a medicine, go through the normal process of being approved. And we have medicines that are approved that have THC in them. But, you know, this broad category of, you know, all these things from back pain to depression to PMS and all these things that will qualify you for a cannabis card. I mean, those are such broad general categories. And, you know, I have a family member that grew up in Colorado, and he says that basically the medical marijuana, legalized marijuana, that anybody that wanted a cannabis card could get one. And, I mean, and that's the way it is. These categories are so broad and general for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way it looks. But, I mean, it has been just a food fight to get this off the ground. And that, I mean, like I said, you kind of called it, but thought I would make mention of that. Hey, well, what do you make, and trying to hurry through some of this. So the Huntsville Hospital System has acquired some new property. There sort of seems to be a consolidation of hospitals, or at least hospital systems, I guess. And I think I heard you talking about it a little bit yesterday. Well, what do you make of it? I know there's a certificate of need element to this discussion, but way this trend is going, is this good or bad?
I think overall bad for a variety of reasons. One hospital system calls all the shots, and it's not necessarily good for, I understand the resources that they bring, and everybody doesn't know. I mean, the hospital that I practiced in when I retired is affiliated with Huntsville Hospital, and they brought some tremendous resources in, some equipment in, but the bottom line is they also set the pay scale, and we're going to look at Crestwood and Huntsville. You know, the nurses are at Crestwood are paid more than the nurses at Huntsville Hospital. That trend's probably not going to continue. So when you take anybody's choices out of where they go as a patient, where they work, for physicians, you've only got one hospital system now that you can practice in. Taking away those options and consolidating the market like that, in the long run, I don't think is a good thing.
No, and healthcare is very important to people, and we talk about rural health care a lot in this state, but everything seems to be kind of coalescing around just a few big players, and I get you're right about the resources, but are we going to be like under one hospital umbrella someday in this state, or two or three, and that has an impact on the marketplace?
Oh, absolutely. And it's University of South Alabama, UAB, Huntsville Hospital. I mean, there are three big players in the state right now. And said, and it's not just rural. You know, the other hospitals are caught in the middle of that as well. Well,
they're struggling here in Montgomery with Jackson Hospital. That's a disaster. I guess that's the way it is for now. And if that ever comes to be a bigger problem, what needs to be done there? What's the trend? Is long-term trend doesn't seem to be good.
Well, that's the other problem with the CON law, and you kind of mentioned that, is when you get control of the market of a big area, anybody that say, wanted to build, we'll just pick Huntsville since that's the one you brought up. Anybody that wanted to build a new healthcare facility in the Huntsville market, Huntsville Hospital can object to their CON and basically block them completely out of the market. And now they can object with multiple sites of, you know, of Crestwood can object, Huntsville Hospital can object, Madison can object. And so you just surround an area with people that have the ability to keep anybody else from coming into the area.
It's just like they're conquering territory on a map. And the map, the territory, they buy a property and it seems to sell through, and it, they get that territory where they can keep other players out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at least I don't think it's a good trend either. But that's just kind of a layman's view of what's going on. Hey, I need to ask you this. I've been asking everybody who's come on the show. You think about this building you're going to miss? You can say no.
Just the familiarity.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a career Montgomery person, but this is the only place that I've ever been. And, you know, I know where the bathrooms are and where the committee rooms are. And it absolutely is outdated and unsafe probably in some areas. It was never designed for what it's used for, so it's inaccessible in a lot of areas for the general public. So, yeah, actually, I haven't seen the new building, but I'm going over there to see it at 3 o'clock today. So I will see it. But the bottom line is we do need an update, but just the familiarity of this building and the history behind it.
Do you ever get the ailments that some get from spending time here?
No, I guess I started to say I'm going to miss all the mold, but
I'm feeling it today. It's the second day in a row here, and I'm feeling it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it always happens. I try to spend only a day a week here during session, but this week is my week, and I can definitely feel it. Yeah. It's not like a fairy tale. There's something, whatever that is, that's either giving you the sniffles.
I don't know. I don't.
Yeah. So, well, if you've been stayed from that, then good. Hey, let's get a break in here. We got a few more minutes with Senator Stutz. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
And it probably always will. And on your school ways, I repair up here. We got Rebel Facts, Blind, and Budweiser beer. Plenty of snow in the.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on what's left of this Wednesday. Tomorrow on the program, you get April Murray Fogle. I'll be back on Friday with Todd Stacey, Joshua McKee, and Chris Elliott, our returning champion. So please tune in tomorrow, but also tune in on Friday. Just a couple more minutes here with Senator Stutz. Real quick, you and I were talking about it off air. You are in a Senator Orr has a bill that wants to change the qualifications for SNAP benefits, and that's what's going on now. Where are we on that, and what do we need to know?
Well, the bill was in committee this morning, and I said that's why I was late. I got real engrossed in the discussion on the bill and asking some questions about it. And Senator Orr is providentially hindered from being here today. They had a death in the family, and so he's not here to carry the bill and answer questions about it. But anyway, the bill basically just tightens up the requirements. It shortens the period of time for when you have to recertify. And DHR is opposed to that because it gives them more work of having to recertify people sooner. But our error rate is about 9% in relation to the fraud, abuse, error, this discussion that's going on nationwide. And Alabama's rate's about 9%, and they feel good about that. I think that's way too high. You know, and these programs like SNAP, whatever, I mean, they're meant to be not a safety net. People call them a safety net. You can fall into a safety net and lay there forever. You know, it should be a trampoline that you fall down and you bounce off of that and you get back on your feet and keep moving, and not just a safety net that you can fall into and stay there. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a an overdue thing that's been long needed to be done. At least some scrutiny to that. Senator, we got to get out of here, but I do appreciate you stopping by. Next time, we'll try to get it. We have a little more time to talk about.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, and I apologize again for being late.
It's all good. I know how busy things can get around here. I got to get out of here. That's it for me. I will try to do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.